It's December 28, 2004 in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. In the Luzerne County Courthouse, defense attorney Stephen Urbanski is sitting inside courtroom number 4, getting ready to present his case to the judge. Urbanski finishes scribbling a note on a yellow legal pad, then turns and gives his client a reassuring smile, trying to convey the message that he has nothing to worry about. But the small gesture isn't having much of an effect on his client. Urbanski is representing a scrawny boy named Matthew, who's only in the 7th grade. He looks pale and terrified to be sitting in court. And while Urbanski wishes he could offer some concrete promises and set Matthew's mind at ease, he knows this case could take some unexpected turns. Matthew was recently charged with assaulting an adult. It all started when he got into an altercation with his mother's boyfriend. The boy's mother didn't actually see the incident, but her boyfriend claimed that Matthew shoved him and later threw a steak at him. When Urbanski was brought onto the case, he assumed that that was just another garden variety dispute between a teenager and his family. But unfortunately, the boy's mother decided to escalate the conflict. She ended up calling the police, filing charges against her own son. Urbanski feels a lot of sympathy for this young boy. His parents went through a messy divorce, and they're still in the middle of a custody battle. So it was Matthew's father who hired Urbanski to serve as his son's defense attorney. It's an ugly situation, but Urbanski doesn't think this should be an especially hard case for Judge Mark Chivarella. The defense attorney believes the judge should throw out the charges and then put Matthew back in his father's custody. Urbanski finishes preparing his remarks and rises from the defense table. Then he turns to Judge Chivarella, a diminutive man with wire-framed glasses and an air of self-importance.
Your Honor, my client takes responsibility for the verbal dispute with his mother's boyfriend. But we need to address the alleged incident at the center of these charges. My client has been accused of throwing a steak at an adult man. But the fact is that never happened. The argument never rose above a simple disagreement.
Well, Mr. Urbanski, the defendant's mother and her boyfriend have both testified otherwise. How do you explain that?
Your Honor, we've got a complicated situation. The defendant's parents are in the midst of a lengthy dispute over custody rights. Tensions are running high. So I'd ask that the court give everyone a chance to cool off. The best way to accomplish that is to place my client in his father's custody.
Well, counsel, I'm not interested in any squabbles over parental rights. You'll remember that this isn't a custody hearing. This is about your client's assault of his mother's partner.
Your Honor, I have to push back on that, if you will. We're talking about a fully grown man who suffered no injuries. My client, on the other hand, is a 7th grader who barely weighs 100 pounds soaking wet. I must repeat, this was not an assault.
Well, I've heard enough. I'd like to speak to the defendant.
Urbanski pauses, glancing over at his client. He's not entirely surprised by how this is playing out. He's heard stories about this judge, that he can be uncaring and even cruel. But Matthew does need to address him, so Urbanski gives him the go-ahead, and he begins explaining his side of the story. But Chivarella quickly cuts him off.
Well, look, son, clearly neither of your parents have a firm grasp on discipline. That responsibility now falls on the state of Pennsylvania.
Urbanski jumps in.
Your Honor, I'd suggest we set aside any thoughts of discipline. My client has no prior record. I don't want to hear it, counsel. Your client is hereby remanded to juvenile detention.
Striking his gavel, Judge Chivarella brings the hearing to a close. And a moment later, a pair of officers come barreling toward Matthew. They grab the boy by his elbows and begin dragging him out of the courtroom. Urbanski watches, speechless, as Matthew is escorted out, his eyes wide with fear. Urbanski has never seen anything like this, a scrawny young boy being treated like a violent criminal. And when Urbanski looks back at Chivarella, the judge doesn't look even slightly affected. He's already moved on to the next case. Urbanski shakes his head in disgust. In all his years practicing law, he's never encountered a miscarriage of justice quite like this. And on some level, it doesn't even make sense. How could a judge be so callous? And what could drive a man to punish an innocent boy without even batting an eye?
American Scandal is sponsored by Audible. I get the thrill of, say, skydiving, but it's a lot of work and expense for something that lasts only minutes and comes with some safety concerns. Instead, I get my thrills in a lower dose, stretched out over hours with a good mystery. Like in the Penguin modern classic Perfume, The Story of a Murderer by Patrick Susskind. And as an Audible member, I can choose one title every month to keep forever from the entire catalog of classics, bestsellers, new releases, and Audible originals ready to listen whenever, wherever on the Audible app.
New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/AS or text AS to 500-500. That's audible.com/AS or text AS to 500-500. American Scandal is sponsored by True Green. This is a true story. Right now, fertilizer is spilled all over my garage, and the fertilizer spreader has lost a wheel. While I'm usually pretty DIY, some things I leave to professionals. True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to a beautiful lawn. You water and mow, they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. So you do you and let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed. From Wondery, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is American Scandal. Northeastern Pennsylvania, County Judge Mark Chivarella maintained a policy of zero tolerance for juvenile crime. He'd run for office on a message of law and order. And when Chivarella took the bench, he made good on his promise, sending minors to juvenile detention at a higher rate than almost any judge in the state. At the time, juvenile offenders in Luzerne County were sent to an old and dilapidated facility, but Chivarella wasn't content with the status quo. So he teamed up with fellow judge Michael Conahan, and together the two worked to construct a new for-profit detention center called PA Child Care. By January of 2003, construction on the facility was nearly complete. And once the project was wrapped, each of the judges stood to gain nearly $500,000 in finder's fees. But they had to make sure the detention center would be a success, and that meant finding some way to guarantee a steady stream of business. So Judge Conahan, in his role as president judge, signed a secret contract between the court and his own for-profit detention center. The agreement would send over $1.3 million every year to PA Child Care, a payment that effectively guaranteed the facility would have a steady stream of juvenile offenders. At the same time, Conahan's partner, Judge Mark Chivarella, doubled down on his policy of zero tolerance, sending more and more children to juvenile detention. But as Chivarella grew more punitive, local members of the community began to speak out. Parents, reporters, attorneys, and judges all began to wonder whether the court had grown corrupt and whether the county's children had become pawns in a larger scheme. This is Episode 2, The Joke That Landed a Girl in Jail. It's the spring of 2004 in the Luzerne County Courthouse, and reporter Mike Gaidish is about to sit down for what could be a contentious interview. Gaidish covers education for the Times Leader, a newspaper in northeastern Pennsylvania. And recently, he was reporting on what should have been a sleepy affair, a meeting of the local school board. But halfway through the event, Gaidish heard something that made his ears perk up. A local mother began describing a shocking experience with the county's juvenile court system, one that led to what she thought was needless punishment. The woman's daughter, a 15-year-old named Lisa, had written a note about carrying a gun at school and shooting people in the kneecaps. It was meant to be a joke, and Lisa was hoping someone would stumble on the note and have a good laugh. But when someone did find the note, Lisa got in a world of trouble. She ended up getting suspended for 3 days. But Lisa's troubles didn't end there. She was arrested and jailed at PA Child Care, the nearby juvenile detention center. Lisa then had to go to court and face Judge Mark Chivarella. Lisa's case should have been fairly straightforward. She was a good kid with a 3.8 GPA, involved in choir and science Olympiad. She's never once been in trouble. But Chivarella didn't spend more than a few minutes on the case before ordering Lisa to be placed in a wilderness camp for delinquents and giving her an indefinite sentence. That night at the school board meeting, Lisa's mother spoke of her horrors dealing with the local court system, trying to protect her daughter. And Gaidish felt shocked by the whole thing. His reporter's instincts also told him he had a story. So Gaidish began digging. And what he found not only confirmed the mother's specific complaints,
it proved that Lisa had been victim to a breakdown in the larger system of juvenile justice. Gydish decided to keep reporting the story to see what else he could find. And today, Gydish has come to the county courthouse to have a conversation with Judge Mark Chivarella. Partly, this is a matter of good journalistic practice. Getting the judge's side of the story is important. But Gydish is also curious whether he can get Chivarella to open up and admit some of the bigger problems with juvenile court. Gydish steps into the county courthouse, an elaborate building with Greek columns and stained glass windows. And when he arrives at Chivarella's chambers, he finds the judge sitting behind his desk, surrounded by a stack of legal files.
Mr. Gydish, is it that time already? It is, Your Honor. Are you still available for a quick interview? Well, yeah, as long as it's quick. I mean, look at all this. I've got a motion to dismiss, a motion for a change of venue, 3 motions to exclude evidence. No shortage of work around here. Well, so I've heard, and actually that's a big part of why I'm here. I was curious to learn a little more about your approach to dealing with all these juvenile cases. Well, yeah, I'm happy to answer questions. Where do you want to start?
Gydish takes out his notebook and flips through a couple of pages.
Well, I thought we'd start with the case of a girl named Lisa. Now, her mother had some pretty critical remarks about your courtroom. Yeah, I remember that case. Her daughter, she's the one who threatened terrorism. Well, based on what I've heard, the girl Lisa, she said the whole thing was a prank. I don't call terrorism a prank. The girl left a note at school threatening to shoot young men in the kneecaps. I take that very seriously. We can't afford another Columbine. Of course, but this girl doesn't exactly fit the profile. She's on the honor roll, well-liked, popular. And based on my reporting, there were character witnesses willing to speak on her behalf, but you didn't let them. Well, yeah, that's right. The probation officers do those kind of interviews before we get to court. Well, Your Honor, I looked into that, and apparently no one in the court visited Lisa's home or even spoke with her family. It seems your probation officers didn't conduct any preliminary interviews. That's so? That's what I found. So my question is, you've got a nice kid sitting in your court, a kid with a good GPA, no history of trouble. Why take her away from her family? What's the benefit? Well, Mr. Gydish, when you run a juvenile court like I do, you get to understand how kids work. And this behavior, a note threatening violence, I saw as a cry for help. And I felt it was in her best interest to be put in a new environment. Well, you know, the mother says you just didn't take the time to understand the case, that the system chose to punish her instead of asking questions. Well, I gotta say, it sounds like you're blaming me for what the girl did at school. No, Your Honor, that's not what I'm saying. I am trying to understand your philosophy. Well, my philosophy isn't complicated, Mr. Gydish. I have zero tolerance for crime. That's it. That's how you make kids feel the consequences of their decisions. But Your Honor, I'm going to stop you there. It sounds like you might have an ulterior motive with this story. So let's end the conversation, shall we? But before you go, I want to remind you my approach has been embraced by the school district and the men and women who voted me into office. The same people who read your newspaper. So when you go to write your story, you might want to spend a moment remembering who you're talking to.
Gydish nods. He was hoping to get a little more from Chivarella before things went south. But this interview did confirm his hunch. Gydish has landed on a real story about a local judge with an unyielding philosophy and the potential to destroy lives. It's September 2005 in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, and Judge Chester Murawski is making his way through the county courthouse, getting ready for another meeting about Judge Mark Chivarella. Like Chivarella, Murawski is a local judge, and until recently he presided over the county's family court, a position he held for nearly 23 years. Murawski always felt passionate about the work. When children had to be placed in foster care, Murawski connected the parents to treatment programs and other resources, hoping the parents could one day reunite with their kids. The judge saw himself as an important link in the county's social services, someone who could use the power of the court to help residents lead better lives. But everything changed over the last couple of years. Murawski had shared a budget with Judge Mark Chivarella over in juvenile court. And more, Murawski found that the court's limited funds were being spent locking up minors instead of on social services. This was thanks to Mark Chivarella and his policy of zero tolerance. But with the problem growing increasingly worse, Murawski decided to send a note to local elected leaders detailing his concerns about Chivarella's punitive approach. Murawski thought he was doing the right thing, but 3 days later, he got an unexpected response. Michael Conahan, the president judge of Luzerne County Courts and one of Chivarella's good friends, informed Murawski that he's being transferred out of family court. He was being demoted and reassigned to work in criminal court, a slap in the face for a senior judge like Murawski. It didn't take a genius to understand the message. Anyone calling attention to Conahan's ally Civarella would face swift and severe punishment. But the act of retribution only emboldened Murawski. He's been talking with his colleagues, and today he's going to test out a serious accusation that judges Mark Civarella and Michael Conahan may be corrupt. A moment later, Murawski arrives at the chambers of Judge Ann Lacuda and takes a seat in the leather armchair. Lacuda sets down her pen and gives Murawski a studious look before saying he seems troubled. What's on his mind? Murawski decides to ease into it, saying he's been thinking a lot about that series in the Times Leader, the newspaper articles that looked at Civarella and his high rates of juvenile detention. That report found that Civarella's policy of zero tolerance had raised costs for the county 400% in only 5 years. And the reporter Mark Geidish found instances when the judge placed minors in detention on seemingly insignificant charges. Murawski finishes his recap of the news reports and waits to get some initial reactions from Judge Lacuda. At first, it's hard to tell where she stands on the matter. She says the stories have been out for a while. What's Murawski getting at? Well, he says, something seems off. And Murawski is starting to wonder if Civarella and Conahan might be breaking the law. Lacuda leans back in her chair with a look of concern. What could possibly lead him to suggest that his colleagues are criminals? Murawski admits he doesn't have hard evidence, but it makes sense when you add things up. Just recently, Murawski took a trip to Florida and decided to get a first-hand look at the vacation condo that Conahan and Civarella owned together. He expected something nice, but when Murawski saw it for himself, he was floored. The judges own a luxury property. The views of the coast are magnificent. The whole complex is lined with expensive cars. And Murawski knows Conahan's wife comes from money, that Conahan himself has some outside business ventures. But that's not the case with Judge Civarella. So somehow, these two men might have gotten their hands on a lot of money. And it seems to point to that new juvenile detention center, PA Child Care. Civarella has a staggering rate of incarceration. And if you acknowledge that some of his decisions just don't seem to make sense, the fact that he's sending away good kids, you realize there has to be another reason for the detentions. It's possible the judges are getting kickbacks, Murawski says, a reward for keeping PA childcare humming with juveniles. Lacuda exhales and takes it all in. Then she tells Murawski that, on its surface, the accusation seems a bit imaginative. But if there is any truth to it, Murawski has to remember that he's placing himself at risk. Judge Conahan is powerful and well-connected. He's not the kind of person you want as an enemy. So maybe, instead, Murawski should bring these claims to the Judicial Conduct Review Board to see if there was any breach in professional ethics. Murawski nods, and he gets it. Lacuda doesn't have an appetite for rocking the boat, even if it's in service of doing the right thing. So he thanks Lacuda for hearing him out and takes his leave. His next move, though, will have to be talking with someone with power, with real organizational muscle, someone who isn't afraid of Mark Civarella and Michael Conahan. Not long after speaking with Judge Lacuda, Judge Chester Murawski walks over to the window of his chambers and looks out at the Susquehanna River. It's an overcast day in northeastern Pennsylvania, and near the banks of the river, a flock of geese come flying down and land on the water with a gentle splash. It's a soothing image, but Murawski's reverie is interrupted when the phone rings. When he answers, he finds an FBI agent on the other end of the line. Murawski tenses up. He's been expecting this call for a while now, conversation that could shake things up in Luzerne County. By now, Murawski is all but certain that something is going on with his colleagues, Mark Civarella and Michael Conahan, but he can't prove it definitively. He's tried talking to some of the other county judges, but everyone has the same advice. Murawski should keep his mouth shut and stop making accusations. But he hasn't been able to let it go, not when so many kids are getting jailed for meaningless offenses. So Murawski reached out to the FBI. And now that they've called him back, Murawski begins laying out all his evidence against Civarella and Conahan. But right away, he can tell the federal agent is skeptical and looking for hard evidence. Murawski admits what he's got is circumstantial, but it does point to one conclusion. The two judges are somehow making money from kickbacks,
with Mark Civarella placing large numbers of children in a for-profit detention center. The FBI agent admits the facts are interesting, but the conclusion is far-fetched. Murawski is describing a brazen scheme perpetrated by judges. It doesn't sound credible. Murawski admits in anywhere else other than northeastern Pennsylvania, it would be hard to swallow. But here, half of everyone in the Luzerne County court system are either a friend or relative of the two judges. That's why no one's speaking out. Even Michael Conahan's brother-in-law is on the payroll. He's a doctor who evaluates the kids being sent to PA childcare. And Judge Civarella is sending kids away for even the most petty transgressions. He once even locked up a girl for getting in an argument with her grandmother. That kind of ruling doesn't make any sense unless you reframe it as part of some larger scheme. The FBI agent is silent for a moment as he mulls it all over. But then he repeats he's sorry. There's a lot of interesting local color, but the idea the two county judges are sending kids away to jail to try to make money just sounds preposterous. Murawski stifles a bitter laugh. He expected more from the FBI, but he can't force this guy to open an investigation. So he thanks the agent for his time and hangs up, feeling tired and defeated. Murawski has done everything he can, and he has to believe that someday these two judges are going to get caught for whatever crimes they're committing. But in the meantime, Murawski is left with only a sliver of hope that people will start talking and that Mark Civarella will start showing a little mercy on the children of Luzerne County. American Scandal is sponsored by the new masterpiece series, Mr. Bates vs. the Post Office. Following one of the greatest miscarriages of justice in British legal history, the new masterpiece series, Mr. Bates vs. the Post Office, is based on the shocking true story of the British Post Office scandal. When money started to seemingly disappear from local branches, the government-owned post office wrongly blamed their own managers for its apparent loss. And for more than a decade, hundreds were accused of theft and fraud. Many were even sent to prison, leaving lives, marriages, and reputations in ruins. But the issue was actually caused by errors in the post office's own computer system, something it denied for years. Don't miss Mr. Bates vs. the Post Office, starring Toby Jones, beginning Sunday, April 7th on Masterpiece on PBS. The series will be available to stream on the PBS app, PBS Masterpiece Prime Video Channel, and PBS.org.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
It's January 2007, and a bitter cold evening in Whitehaven, Pennsylvania. Lorene Transu steps through the doorway of her two-story suburban home and brushes off a light dusting of snow. She kicks off her boots and sets her coat in the closet. And as she steps into the living room, Lorene calls out to her 14-year-old daughter, Hillary, letting her know she's home from work. It's been a long day for Lorene. She's a veteran social worker and has just taught a six-hour class designed to help welfare recipients build new careers. And as soon as the class was over, she hopped in her car and had to drive 30 miles back home. Now that she's here, all Lorene wants to do is collapse on the couch and kick up her feet. But the day has gotten late, so first things first, it's time to whip up a quick dinner. Lorene begins taking out pots and pans and grabs a few ingredients from the fridge. She's about to start in with the veggies when suddenly her cell phone rings. Lorene almost ignores it. It's probably some telemarketer. But her curiosity gets the best of her, and she answers the call.
Hello?
Am I speaking with Lorene Transu?
Yes, this is she. Who's calling?
I'm an officer with the Wright Township Police Department. I need to have a word with you.
Okay. Is something wrong?
Miss Transu, this is about your daughter, Hillary. Apparently, she wrote something on MySpace, that website.
Yeah, I know all about MySpace. What happened, though? What is this about?
Well, it seems Hillary wrote some foul and disgusting things about her school's assistant principal. Some things we're going to have to talk about.
I'm sorry. Is this some kind of joke? What are the police doing reading a teenage girl's MySpace?
Miss Transu, you need to listen closely. I'm on my way to the house, and when I arrive, I'm going to arrest Hillary on charges of terrorism and stalking on the internet.
What? What are you talking about?
I said I'm coming to the house.
No, terrorism? Stalking? My daughter's just a kid. Please, tell me you're joking.
Miss Transu, this is not a joke. I'll be at the house soon.
The officer hangs up, and Laureen sets down her phone, running a hand through her dark blonde hair. That was one of the most surreal phone calls she's ever received. Sure, Hillary has moments of teenage rebellion. She's dyed her hair black and pink, and more than once she's been called the queen of sarcasm. But she's just a teenager. That's what teenagers do. Her daughter is not some kind of terrorist. Still, whatever happened, Laureen is going to have to get answers fast before that police officer arrives at the house. A minute later, Laureen calls up the stairs asking her daughter Hillary to come down for a talk. There's the soft patter of footsteps, and then the 14-year-old comes down the stairs. But as soon as Hillary sees her mother's dour expression, she asks what's going on. Laureen says she just got a call from a police officer. He's apparently coming over to arrest Hillary for a recent post on MySpace, the one about her assistant principal. Hillary laughs and says that's insane. All she did was make a fake account. It was a big joke. She was pretending to be her assistant principal and created a ridiculous alter ego, making the school administrator look like a Satan worshiper and a Nazi and an unhinged fan of Johnny Depp. It was all satire. She even wrote a disclaimer at the bottom, saying she hoped the assistant principal had a sense of humor. Laureen lowers her head. She believes her daughter. This sounds just like another of her teenage jokes. So she doesn't understand why an officer is saying he's about to arrest her daughter for something so benign. But all that matters now is making sure nothing happens to Hillary. So Laureen takes out her phone and calls her own mother to see if she knows any good attorneys. But after explaining the situation, Laureen's mom tells her she's overreacting. She doesn't need a lawyer. She should just call back the officer and try to cooperate. Laureen is herself an experienced social worker and knows that legal counsel is crucial when you're dealing with the police, but she supposes her mother is right. So she calls the officer and tries to take a cooperative stance. But the conversation quickly grows heated. The officer tells Laureen that the school is trying to make an example out of her daughter. The administration does not want other kids pulling the same kind of stunt. Laureen says she understands, but it's extreme to charge a teenage girl with terrorism just because she made a joke on the internet. Finally, Laureen seems to break through, and the tenor of the conversation changes. The officer tells Laureen that if she remains cooperative and leaves the attorneys out of this, he'll only charge Hillary with harassment. She'll probably just get community service and maybe a period of probation. Laureen takes a moment to consider this. All she wants is the best thing for her daughter, and if that means not hiring a lawyer, then she's willing to go along. So she gives in and says they'll cooperate and keep this simple, as long as that means the whole ordeal will be soon behind them. 3 months later, Laureen Transu makes her way through the Luzerne County Courthouse with her daughter Hillary walking beside her. Laureen steals a quick glance at her daughter, trying not to make her feel self-conscious. Hillary is wearing a gray pantsuit and a blouse that Laureen loaned her for the day. She looks good, like a respectable young woman, exactly the kind of image they're trying to convey for today's hearing in juvenile court. As promised, Hillary was not charged with terrorism for writing a satirical post on MySpace. And Laureen kept up her end of the deal, agreeing to come to court without a lawyer. It felt risky, but Laureen also doesn't believe anyone would send Hillary away for what was basically an off-color joke. Soon, Laureen and Hillary make their way into the courtroom. It's an intimidating space, with high ceilings and an air of formality. It's not a natural habitat for a teenage girl, and Laureen can tell her daughter is feeling anxious. So she grabs hold of her daughter's hand, trying to comfort her. The two approach the defense table and take a seat. Soon, Judge Mark Chivarella begins the hearing. Laureen was expecting at least a trace of kindness or generosity, the kind of qualities you'd expect from a judge dealing with children. But as soon as he calls the hearing to order, Chivarella scowls at Hillary and almost yells at her, asking what makes her think she can get away with this. Laureen scans the room, seeing if anyone else is watching this,
The judge doesn't even begin with introductions or greetings, just aggression. And it appears to be having its effect. Hillary looks to the ground, and her voice trembles as she mumbles her responses. Chivarella scoffs and asks how she pleads to the charge of harassment. Hillary tells Chivarella she pleads guilty. Chivarella continues, asking why she created that MySpace post in the first place. Hillary says she doesn't really know. She doesn't have a rational explanation. And she admits she didn't take into consideration that her assistant principal was a person and not just an anonymous school administrator. Laureen nods along. Her daughter is acknowledging her wrongdoing, and that's good. But Chivarella doesn't seem moved by the show of remorse. And then he asks Hillary if she remembers what he said when he spoke at her school assembly. Hillary says she doesn't. Chivarella barks at her again, asking if she was asleep. Hillary looks frightened and says she doesn't have an answer. But that only makes Chivarella even angrier. He tells Hillary, "I didn't walk into that school and I didn't speak to that student body just to scare you, just to blow smoke." Then Chivarella tells Hillary, "I'm a man of my word. You're gone." Chivarella announces her punishment, saying he's sending Hillary to a wilderness camp and she can stay there until she figures herself out. Hillary turns to her mother, stunned. Laureen doesn't know what to say. Hillary was supposed to get probation. At worst, community service, they were told. No one said anything about being sent away from home. And before Laureen can process what's happening, Hillary is led out of the courtroom in handcuffs. Immediately, Laureen feels her legs go weak. She collapses onto her knees, sobbing, and starts begging Chivarella to change his mind. She even offers to take her daughter's place. But Chivarella ignores her. And then the bailiffs threaten to throw her in jail or a psych ward if she doesn't quiet down. The cruel threats have their desired effect. Laureen stops begging for the judge's leniency and somehow manages to pull herself together and stand up again. But as she lumbers out of the courtroom, Laureen's shock and sorrow begins to morph into indignation and fury. In all her years working with kids, she's never seen such blatant injustice. She can't imagine this is the first time Judge Chivarella has treated a child with such contempt. It's a shock to the conscience. And Judge Chivarella might have thought he could get away with this, but he has miscalculated. Laureen is going to start making calls to the ACLU, to the Public Defender's Office, to every elected official in Pennsylvania. And she's going to start spreading the word about what's happening in Luzerne County. She won't quit, and she won't relent until Judge Mark Chivarella faces a public reckoning.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's early May 2007 in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. It's a slow afternoon in the Luzerne County Courthouse. In the gallery of Judge Mark Chivarella's courtroom, the defense attorney, Laval Miller Wilson, is sitting patiently, listening as another juvenile case plays out before the court. Miller Wilson stifles a yawn. The other lawyer arguing his case in front of Chivarella is making some straightforward points about his client. And in turn, Chivarella seems poised and focused, a model judge in juvenile court. It's been like this all afternoon. In every hearing, Chivarella has been diligently following court procedure and giving out fair sentences to the minors appearing before him. He's doing a good job of listening and asking questions, and Chivarella has been striking a respectful and conciliatory tone. And that's why Miller Wilson is feeling so confused. When he stepped foot in this courtroom, he was expecting to find a much different Judge Chivarella. Miller Wilson is no stranger himself to the nightmares of juvenile court. He works as a staff attorney at the Juvenile Law Center, a nonprofit based out of Philadelphia. His organization does a lot of work on public policy and advocacy with the goal of addressing systemic problems with America's juvenile justice system. And last month, his organization received a distressing voicemail explaining that Judge Civarella had given a horrifying punishment to a girl named Hillary Transu. The teenager was only guilty of making a satirical post on MySpace, but Civarella had pulled her out of her home, sending her to a wilderness camp to teach her a lesson. Miller Wilson got in touch with Hillary's mother, Laureen, and when the two spoke on the phone, Laureen nearly broke down, explaining how Civarella had sent away her daughter, a good kid who's never been in any real trouble. So hearing the story, Miller Wilson quickly agreed to represent Hillary and began working on the case. The picture only grew more upsetting when Miller Wilson began reviewing the files. The court transcript was less than 350 words long. It appeared that Judge Civarella had only given Hillary a few minutes of his time before tearing her away from her family and completely upending her life. But even more disturbing was Civarella's flagrant disregard of the law. According to the transcript, the judge failed to recite a speech required in all juvenile court hearings, one that explains that minors have a legal right to an attorney and that there are consequences to pleading guilty and waiving the right to a trial. But Civarella hadn't given that explanation to Hillary. Instead, he sent her away in shackles without even ruling how long she would be separated from her family. As a legal matter, it was pretty cut and dry. Miller Wilson filed a petition challenging Hillary's conviction, and earlier today, Judge Civarella reversed her guilty verdict. But setting her free couldn't fix the damage that had already been done. At this point, the eighth grader had been separated from her family for nearly 3 weeks. And while he's glad he could at least secure Hillary's freedom, Miller Wilson wasn't ready to call it quits. It's his job to root out systemic problems with America's juvenile justice system. And by the looks of it, Judge Mark Civarella was potentially damaging an entire region. So after wrapping up the hearing about Hillary Transu, Miller Wilson asked permission to stay in Civarella's court. He was curious to spend some time watching to see whether Hillary's case was a kind of aberration. Civarella looked annoyed by the request, but he allowed it, and now Miller Wilson has been observing the courtroom throughout the day. And so far, Civarella seems to be doing everything by the books. Of course, the judge knows he's being watched, and he could just be putting on a show. So after a while, Miller Wilson decides it's time to get up, stretch his legs, and maybe see if anyone in the courthouse has something interesting to say. In the hallway, Miller Wilson spots an assistant public defender coming out of Civarella's courtroom. He represented a few juveniles in court and spent a good amount of time dealing with the judge. And as a public defender, this probably isn't the first time in front of Civarella. So Miller Wilson approaches and asks whether this was a normal day. The defense attorney smiles, shakes his head, and says, "No, not at all." Miller Wilson can feel it. He's onto something. So he asks the public defender, "What's different?" The attorney looks hesitant to speak, though. He checks his watch and tells Miller Wilson he's sorry. He has to get back into court for another hearing. But he will say this, "Judge Civarella is acting much different than usual." Miller Wilson nods. This is probably all he's going to get, at least today. So he thanks the public defender and wishes him good luck in court. A minute later, Miller Wilson looks at his own watch, checking the time. The day's gotten late, and he can tell there's no use staying for the remaining hearings. Civarella must be on especially good behavior if he's getting that kind of reaction from regulars. Miller Wilson thinks it's proof that he isn't getting an accurate picture of the judge. So he begins planning next steps. Miller Wilson's going to try to learn more about Judge Mark Civarella, and he's going to have to return another day, but make sure Civarella doesn't know he's coming. 4 months later, Laval Miller Wilson stands leaning against a marble pillar outside the Luzerne County Juvenile Courtroom. He buries his nose in a file folder, trying to avoid the curious gaze of a passing court employee. And after the man walks by, Miller Wilson shakes his head, grinning. It's kind of fun pretending to be a spy. When the employee is out of sight, Miller Wilson lowers the folder and turns back to Mark Civarella's courtroom, where the judge is issuing a series of severe punishments. And this is exactly why Miller Wilson returned to the courthouse. He wanted to see the real Mark Civarella, the unadorned, unfiltered version of the judge he'd heard about from Hillary Transu. It's not that Miller Wilson doubted his clients. In the last few months, Miller Wilson has gathered more heartbreaking stories about Judge Civarella. he spoke to one of Hillary Transu's newest friends, a girl she met in wilderness camp. Jessica Van Reith had been sentenced by Civarella after being caught with a lighter and a pipe and charged with possession of drug paraphernalia. After listening to Van Reith's story, Miller Wilson began to see the pattern. Both girls committed minor offenses, and neither had ever been in trouble before. They both appeared in court without a lawyer, and Judge Civarella did not give either child a mandatory speech, confirming they were knowingly, voluntarily waiving the right to an attorney. Miller Wilson and his colleagues could tell that he was onto something, so he began to look at state and county data, and what he found was shocking. In 2004, if you looked at the entire state of Pennsylvania, only about 5% of juvenile defendants waived their right to have an attorney. But in Luzerne County, that number was 10 times higher, 50.2%. It also turned out that Judge Civarella was locking kids up at a breathtaking rate, 2.5 times the state average. It all painted a picture of a courtroom where children were denied their legal right to an attorney and then were punished, sent to juvenile detention when they couldn't defend themselves against an adult judge. Still, Miller Wilson has been wondering how all this has actually played out on the ground. So he figured he could probably find the answer if he came back to the Luzerne County Courthouse and tried talking to some of the families coming out of Civarella's courtroom. Miller Wilson is standing outside the courtroom, trying to keep a low profile, when the doors fly open and a middle-aged woman comes racing out, her face streaked with tears.
Ma'am, excuse me, can I speak with you for a moment? It's not a good time. I understand that, but I wouldn't ask if it weren't important. Fine, what do you want? Did your child just appear in front of Judge Civarella? I'm sorry, who are you?
My name's Laval Miller Wilson. I'm a public interest lawyer. I work with kids dealing with people like Judge Civarella. I just want to know, when your child went in front of him, did they have an attorney?
No, it was just me.
Are you aware that the state will provide your child with a public defender if you don't have the money for a lawyer?
I don't know, but it's a little late now.
Miller Wilson points across the hallway. There's a court employee stationed at a desk handing out forms to children about to face Judge Civarella.
You see that gentleman over there? Did you speak to him?
Yeah, he gave us this document we had to sign.
What kind of document?
I don't know. Something about we didn't have a lawyer for my son.
All right, and when you were in court, did Judge Civarella ask your child about waiving their right to counsel?
Sir, they just hauled away my boy in handcuffs.
I can't process what you're asking me. I gotta go.
Okay.
And I understand. Look, before you go, here's my card. Call me, okay? If you ever need some help or just want to talk about what happened today.
The woman thanks Miller Wilson and grabs the card. Then she hurries away as a fresh wave of tears begins streaking her face. It's always devastating seeing a parent grappling with the incarceration of one of their children. Based on everything Miller Wilson has gathered, this kind of grief has become an epidemic in Luzerne County. But now that he's seen it in person, Miller Wilson is finally getting a clear picture about what's happening. It's a 1-2 punch. Court employees are asking minors to sign a form before they step into Civarella's courtroom. The kids don't realize it, but by signing the form, they're waiving their legal right to an attorney. At the same time, Judge Civarella isn't informing juvenile defendants about their fundamental legal rights, explaining that they don't have to defend themselves. Add it all up, and it makes sense that Luzerne County has such an enormous rate of juvenile detention. It almost seems like it's by design. But that's the part Miller Wilson can't figure out. Why would a judge be so hell-bent on putting kids in detention? Miller Wilson can't yet put together the pieces, but he knows there has to be an explanation. Something no one's talking about. There may be even a crime taking place. But whatever the reason may be, Miller Wilson is going to get some answers. And that might mean taking on a judge and his powerful allies. From Wondery, this is episode 2 of the Kids for Cash Kickback Scheme for American Scandal. In our next episode, the FBI begins investigating Mark Civarella, and with pressure mounting, Civarella and Michael Conahan plot to keep their crimes under wraps. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to American Scandal ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you'd like to learn more about the Kids for Cash scheme, we recommend the book Kids for Cash, Two Judges, Thousands of Children, and a $2.8 million kickback scheme by William Eckenbarger, and the documentary Kids for Cash, directed by Robert May. This episode contains reenactments and dramatized details. And while in most cases we can't know exactly what was said, all our dramatizations are based on historical research. American Scandal is hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham, for Airship. Audio editing by Christian Paraga. Sound design by Molly Bach. Music by Lindsey Graham. This episode is written by Vanessa Gomez, edited by Christina Malzberg. Our consultant for this series is William Eckenbarger. Our senior producer is Gabe Ribbon. Executive producers are Stephanie Jens, Jenny Lauer-Beckman, and Marshall Louie for Wonder.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.